Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 27th. I'm John Gibson, and joining me as usual is Jim Allen. Howdy, Jim.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Man, I got done early. I had ice cream. The dishes are done. The clothes are folded.
Man.
Everything's good. It's all good. It's all good. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Enjoyed a beautiful weekend at the ballpark, as you did.
Yeah.
A beautiful day at the ballpark.
Yeah, one day. One day of the weekend, but that's a weekend. You know, one day is good enough. It's better than zero.
Yeah, well, we needed that. We both got columns coming up this week, so good to talk to some people. Got nice stuff from both of the managers, the Lions manager and the Eagles manager.
Both friends of yours, so that helps.
Yeah, well, they both speak. They don't turn their backs and run away usually.
Or growl.
Yeah. Well,
all right.
Both have been thoroughly bribed.
Nice to know. Maybe I'll get a loan to get the bribe money.
You know what it is the homemade chocolate cake and cake, bread, and cookies.
I can cook.
Well, you can do that.
I can do that. I'll give it my best. This week we got a quick chat with Michael Westbay. Then we're going to discuss more the Interleague MVP and talk about a key injury and a whole lot more. So let's get going with Clearing the Bases. All right, I had a quick chat with Michael Westbay. He looked at some of the numbers that went on in Interleague, and he also complimented you. And he broke down the pitches that were hit for home runs during Interleague. And he said that you hit the nail on the head.
Did I?
With your comment about a lot of fastballs being hit for home runs.
What? That was just a lucky guess. You know, oddly enough, because Michael, I know, was did. He counted the pitches that were being hit,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about the fork. I had talked about the fork balls. I'd been misled.
Oh, the devil made me do it.
No. I blew a small sample out of proportion.
You're not the first guy.
After his game of the year, Shohei Tateyama talked about how good his fork ball was working, and what he meant was that day.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not the first guy to blow something over. Out of proportion, so
right.
Things in
so
this
when I talked to him last week, he said, "No, the difference is the curveball. He's able to snap his curveball off like crazy."
All righty. Well, Mr. Tateyama and a lot of other guys were able to pretty much befuddle the batters during Interleague. So let's listen to the interview with Michael Westbay. All right, I'm here talking to Michael Westbay. Thanks for coming on the show again. It's good to have you back.
Always a pleasure.
I also want to take a moment to acknowledge your contributions to the show, posting it each week. We also appreciate the fact that you brought us into the iTunes part of cyberspace.
I want to help do what I can to spread the word about NPB, and anything I do is for that goal. If it benefits other people, that's great.
Fantastic. I know I got a few pieces of email this week, and people are pointing out the fact that we're on iTunes, and they're very appreciative, and so we are much appreciative.
Yeah, iTunes does make things a lot easier to do.
Certainly does. Thank you very much for all your work. And I'm very happy to have you contributing again. I understand you took a look at some of the numbers during Interleague. What have you got for us?
Well, Jim Allen, a show or two ago, was talking about how he thinks that pitchers are using the forkball more, and that may be contributing to some of the home runs given up, and, of course, preventing a lot more hits and what have you, because the pitchers are going after hitters more than they did in previous years due to the new ball, throwing with more confidence.
Right, I was going to say, are they getting more confident, or do they just feel the ball is not going to fly? But probably
right.
It's a combination of
it's
both.
It's a combination of the two is what I think. And so I decided to kind of look into that hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
I gathered up all of the home runs hit during Interleague for 2009, 10, and 11.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, the Interleague stats I think are very good for comparing, because you can look at the Central League and the Pacific League on an equal footing. They both play the same number of games. They both play with the same rules. each time.
Right.
So there is no real kind of advantage within the league. You know, the Pacific League pitchers will pitch more innings because they have the DH and the Central League pitchers and things like that. So they may end up tiring out and giving up home runs in the late innings and such.
Right, but essentially they're on a, pardon the pun, a level playing field here.
Right, and that's what I really love about looking at interleague data. You could say, of course, that the Pacific League pitchers dominated the Central League pitchers in a way that they don't normally dominate their own league.
Mm-hmm. Which we saw with all the shutouts and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that would make an interesting study in the future. But for the time being, I'm just kind of sticking with looking at home runs for the most.
Okay, so what did you find?
Well, the straight slider fork makes up most of the home runs in that order.
The fastball, the slider, and the straight fastball, and then the slider, and then the forkball.
And the forkball, split finger fastball.
Those are the ones that got popped the most, you're saying?
But actually, well, Jim had suggested that the fork was one of the keys. I may be remembering what he said wrong. But he mentioned that the fork was being used more and that many of the home runs being given up may be that.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm finding is that it's a very, very slight increase in forkballs. In 2009, in fact, 2009, there were 4.8% of all the home runs given up were with the forkball.
Came on batters hitting forkballs, okay.
Last year, 2010, 3.9%.
So it went down.
4.5%. So it went up from 2010, but down from 2009. And really, you know, well, last year seemed to be more of an anomaly. About 4%, mm-hmm. and then 2009 was 4.8, and this year 4.5. So 4.5 seems to be kind of in the middle range, and I don't really... There weren't enough home runs given up to really say much.
Yeah, it looks like 12 in 2009 on the forkball, and then 10 in 2010.
11. Yeah.
And then, 11. Yeah, 11 in 2010, and then 7 this year on the fork. So, now what about the fastball now? It looks like the numbers have gone up each year progressively, the percentage at least.
Yes, percentage-wise, the fastball went from 46% fastball home runs in 2009 to 54% fastball home runs in 2010 mm-hmm. to almost 60% this year. I really think that Jim Allen hit the nail on the head when he said that pitchers were challenging the batters.
Oh boy! Well, you know, kudos to Jim, but let's not compliment him too much. We're gonna have trouble fitting his head through the door here. We love you, Jim. We kid because we love.
But I think that those pitchers who are comfortable challenging batters with the fastball, fastball, slider, and forkball,
mm-hmm.
they all really exhibited an increase in the number of home runs given up with those pitches.
Right. And it looks like the actual number went down each year. Well, not each year, but in 2009 we had 114 home runs on these straight fastballs, and then 2010 the number goes up to 154, but then this year down to 91 home runs, fewer than 100.
Well, the number of home runs overall have been down by just about, half?
Something dramatic, and then but the percentage here is what I'm looking at. The percentage is going up, but the actual number went down. So when we get one of these pitchers on, the next time we have a pitcher on the show to interview, we'll ask them if maybe they're just throwing fewer fastballs, or if they're waiting until they get into these difficult counts where the
mm-hmm.
We'll just find out what they're doing, because I watch the games and I don't see anything that out of the ordinary for Japanese baseball.
Well, like your junk ball pitchers, the number of home runs they've given up has decreased, conversely. Mm-hmm. The ones who try to stay away from throwing the ball over the plate. Curveballs are down 4.4% in 2009, 4.2% in 2010, and 2.6% this year. Of course, you only have 11, 12, and 4, so the sample size is still kind of small, but it does show that these other junk pitches are not being hit out.
Yeah.
They were being hit out at a slightly higher rate, but these pitchers are still pitching pretty much the same as they always have been, so I think that that's why the percentages went down, since those pitchers who are challenging batters, the number of home runs has gone up slightly.
Okay.
And the other thing that I studied here was the total number of average pitches when a home run was given up.
Per at bat, you mean?
Per at bat.
Mm-hmm.
Per at bat with a home run.
Right. Was.
So, for example, when the fastball was given up, it was generally somewhere around the third to the third and a half pitch.
The third to the third and a half.
Slider and forkball were somewhere around the third pitch, and forkball was, for this year, two and a half pitch, second and a half pitch. How would you say that?
I guess it would say pitch 2.5.
So between two and three pitches.
Right, right.
So a lot of these are still kind of in the beginning of the count. The curveballs where the home runs have been given up have been over four pitches.
Wow.
The changeup as well has been somewhere over the fourth pitch on average. And, of course, when you only have given up four of them on for the year, four and a half pitches is kind of up there.
All right. Well, that was interesting. Thank you very much, Michael. We really appreciate you coming on. And when you get some more stats or you see something statistically attractive, we will have you on to talk about that again.
I look forward to that. I listen to you, and I especially like a lot of the things that Jim says, and I think that I can look up some of those things and confirm or argue against some of the things that he says there.
Okay. Well, please do. Please do. We look forward to having you on as much as we can, and thanks again for putting us on, first of all, my blog each week, and then secondly, on iTunes. Thank you very much for the help, man.
Always a pleasure.
All right, take
care.
And good luck to your Baystars. All right, take care. All right, that was interesting. And here we have,
Michael.
Thank you very much, Michael. We really appreciate the work you do. Now here we have a bunch of fastballs. I mean, what he said, the fastball, the number of home runs was actually down, but the percentage of fastballs that were hit out for home runs.
Right, more balls are being hit off fastballs.
More home runs hit off fastballs. Yeah, now what does that say to you?
Well, it says that if Tateyama's right, and actually a couple of other, Craig Brazell also said that the ball is tackier than before, that the curveballs are really snapping. What it means to me is that the fast pitches, the hard pitches, the straight fastballs are probably a little more vulnerable in respect to other pitches. I think home runs are going to be down because they're not being driven, but the percentage of those hit off fastballs is going to be higher. I think that would be my explanation.
Well, it tells me one thing is that, maybe two things, but one is that, a lot of times with hard throwers, they always say, you let the pitcher supply the power.
Sure.
And with the ball not carrying as much, if you can get a hold of a fastball, that they're going to go, but perhaps some of the other pitches are not going out as much.
Right. That could well be.
The other thing it might say is that, okay, when guys get into fastball counts, batters really had an advantage.
They don't have fastball counts in Japan, Joe.
Per se. Okay. We know that's a kind of a fallacy if you think you're going to come here and have a quote-unquote fastball count. However, when situations sometimes call for fastballs, and if batters are really prepared for it and they're geared up for it and they make good contact, maybe that's another reason. But we'll have to interview one of the players and ask them. So that'll be something for a future show. But right now I want to get to the fact that the Interleague, speaking of Interleague, MVP was just another horrendous decision.
Oh, it wasn't a horrendous. It wasn't like, you know, they gave it to Joe Blow when he didn't play because he's a name. It was not the optimal choice.
Optimal? It was
optimal. It wasn't the best choice.
It was neighborhood, but it was very much the wrong house, you know.
Okay, fair enough. And you know how much I like Uchikawa, but yeah. I do agree with you on this.
Fukuoka SoftBank's Seiichi Uchikawa got the MVP award, but actually I think it should have been a teammate. A guy without a name, probably. A guy you were high on for a while, at least you started out when you first...
I was high on him based on what he did in the minors and what he did, I'm going to say, 3 years ago, when he had numbers exactly like what he's having this year.
Mm-hmm.
Except he did it in the second half of the season, and he was not playing all the time.
Right. And I remember we talked about him on an earlier episode, and you said you'd basically gotten off that ride.
Yeah. I give up on him because I thought the Hawks had given up on him.
Yeah, you said, I think I'm going to walk from here.
Yeah.
And he's been blossoming this year. It's Nobuhiro Matsuda.
In every category,
offensive category that I could check, He was better than Uchikawa except for two. He had 91 plate appearances and Uchikawa had 100. And in those 91 plate appearances, he had 25 hits. Now Uchikawa had 30, so he led him there. And everywhere else, it seems, except for where was the number here? Let's see, Matsuda has 16 runs to Uchikawa's 11. He had 8 doubles to Uchikawa's 5. He had 5 home runs to Uchikawa's 4. He even walked 5 times and Uchikawa walked only 4. His slugging percentage was about 50 points higher at .595. His OPS was .947. Uchikawa was
.904. Struck out 9 more times.
Well, we don't count that. That's just being aggressive.
Okay. No double plays. And he stole 4 bases, and he plays third base.
He stole 4. I did write down the 4 stolen bases as well. The RBI is 22-20. So I mean, why? Why yeah. Uchikawa? Because of the long face? The big chin?
Oh yeah.
The big strong chin?
You know, he kept his chin up. What can I say?
He kept his chin up. I mean, you know, and I talked to a reporter today about this at the ballpark. I went out to Save a Dome today.
Yep.
And the reporter said to me, well, you know, it's kind of like if Derek Jeter and another guy had similar numbers, who do you think they're going to pick? And I'm like, dude, this is not Derek Jeter we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a bigger name. You know, Uchikawa versus Matsuda, I mean, you know, it's a bigger name. Uchikawa's a bigger name.
Yeah.
But this is no
Derek Jeter. I think what it is they looked at the numbers are similar. One guy's got a big name, and I'll tell you the other one. The .326 batting average. There's still a lot of people out there look at the batting average and say, well, he's a more consistent hitter. Maybe they don't like strikeouts. A lot of more traditional thinkers don't like strikeouts.
Mm.
I mean, strikeouts are not a good thing. They do cost you a little bit, but there's not a big difference. There's absolutely no difference between popping up to second base and striking out.
Or, yeah, fouling out or hitting an unproductive shallow fly ball.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was a mediocre choice. It's not like Uchikawa was not qualified, but Matsuda was more qualified.
Yeah, he hit .298 and Uchikawa hit .326 during Interleague, and that was the biggest gap. But, right. I mean, that's not that big of a gap. I mean, 30, almost 30
and
points.
If you're going to go that route, you could even go with Tomotaka Sakaguchi, Oryx's superb leadoff hitter, I have to say.
He is, he's doing it, huh?
He's doing it every year. He was a guy who didn't used to walk. He did this all in the minors. And he's another example of why I love so many of Oryx's players. They've got some tremendous talent. And if Oryx could ever wake up and decide what they want to do with them, they'd have a pretty good team.
Now, what were his numbers in interleague play?
Yeah, 412 batting average.
Whew, 412, yeah.
he had 42 hits, and 34 of them were singles. But he had five doubles, two triples, a homer. Only stole one base, but he walked 12 times. He scored 21 runs, which is three better than anybody in interleague, and he still drove in 12 from the leadoff spot.
And the 42 hits were the most in interleague by far, right?
Yes. Matt Merton had 33. I think he's second.
Okay. So a possibility. He certainly deserved to get some recognition for his production there. I think he did. I'm not sure. I think they were outstanding awards.
Who were the two second banana winners? One was Utsumi, wasn't it?
Yeah, Utsumi, who won. What did he win? He won five games.
Okay.
And I think it was your boy Sakaguchi. I'm checking here. Yeah, it was him. He did win outstanding.
Okay.
Standard performer. So, I mean, he did get some recognition, but he could have been up there.
But what happened to Matsuda? Well, they can't give it to somebody on the winning team. If they give the MVP to somebody else, nobody else wants to be any good.
What
happened? I don't know what. You figure it out. You're the man.
You know what? I figure out whoever's scoring some of these games is the one who's picking the MVP of interleague, because I can't figure out what an error is sometimes or what a hit is either. So, I mean,
yeah.
It must be the same guy. It's got to be.
Well, you know, they announced the official scores. I write down all the umpires, the home plate umpire is behind every game.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I ought to do that with the scorers. I'm sure that would make me lots of friends at the commissioner's office.
Well, we could look them. Hey, you know, I know a guy who knows a guy.
Those score the games. They don't hire writers or anybody like that. So.
Well, maybe we can straighten these guys out. You know, take one of them into a back room somewhere and work them over and figure. I mean, you know, they just have some questionable scoring decisions out here, and we'll talk about that on a future show. That's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Glad they have that job instead of me. I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, you know what? I would, because I would do it right. You know, I wouldn't want to referee a basketball game because that sport moves way too fast, and there's some other things I wouldn't want to do, and I probably wouldn't want to call balls and strikes behind home plate, but certainly I could sit back there and criticize people when they make mistakes.
You can. You're good at it. You've got a talent, man.
I think I have a special talent when it comes to that. My own mistakes, I think, I'm more forgiving. I'm less harsh on them myself. But, hey... And when guys make mistakes, you just say, hey, that's an error, you know, and move on. And you don't worry about who's pitching and all this stuff. But we'll get to this on a future show. We can talk about this forever.
Let's move on.
And but,
we will go.
So, yeah, the official MVP of Interleague, Seiichi Uchikawa, but the real.
So congratulations.
The people's choice.
Uchikawa, we love you. I do love you. Great guy. Congratulations. Matsuda, better luck next year.
Yeah, well, he's the people's choice. He is the people's choice.
Both of us. Both of the people.
All right, let's move on to a situation that we had in Major League Baseball, and it got me to thinking. When Jim Riggleman stepped down from the Washington Nationals job the other day, it's something we don't really see in Japan where managers say, you know what, I am out of here.
And of course, with the exception of
Terry Collins.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we don't see a lot of Japanese managers do that. And we did have a situation last year, which you know very well.
Yeah, do we have to talk about this?
Why not?
Okay. Wow. I really, you know, actually, there are rules, and I'm not going to broach them about doing internal stuff on the internet. So we're going to have to dance around this. Basically,
dance all you want.
Shigeru Takada, the Swallows decided he was going to quit, and decided in the morning, then was cornered by reporters coming out of the Swallows clubhouse, in which he said, "I haven't made up my mind yet." And I wrote that story. The only problem was 9:30. He changed his mind. He basically told the truth and said, "I'm out of here."
Well, yeah, we don't have to get into the details of the story, but okay, essentially he walked.
So he did walk away
in the middle of the season.
It's not that common in Japan. I mean, it's not that common in the majors.
It isn't, but you know, firings and skipper changes don't happen all that much here. I think 2 years ago was it that. Oya Kantoku over at Yokohama
right.
decided that the front office had spewed enough venom at him that he would walk away.
Yeah.
I don't think it was let's call it an assisted walk.
Assisted job aside.
I like that, job aside. I mean, yeah, he'd just gotten way too much, too many threats, too many media reports, and he decided, you know, I'm calling it quits. I'm out of here.
Well, that was the year. That was the year all his pitchers were hurt. I asked him in Chiba one March afternoon, you know, who do you expect to be the heart of your order? He said, "Well, I know one guy. If you have suggestions for the others, why don't you let me know?"
The poor man.
Yeah, and I know he's a great guy. But let me tell you something that happened once with the Bay Stars. And most of these managers, in fact, this came up last year with Takada, most of the managers who are fired in the middle of the season, they're not technically fired. I think this has to do with their contracts. Most of them are put on leave of absence for health reasons. Okay, now in...
Because they're sick of the team.
Yeah, for the team. Yeah, for everybody else's health. Okay, 1992, we're back in Yokohama with the Taiyo Whales. That might have been the first year they were the Bay Stars. I don't remember.
Okay.
And their manager was Yuta Kasudo, and he had kind of Yokohama Taiyo Whales kind of success, which meant not very much.
Mm-hmm.
And 22 games into the 1992 season in Golden Week, the Taiyo management, Taiyo then was owned by the Maruha Fish Packing Company, decided Sudo's gone, and they want to replace him with Akira Ageri.
Okay.
He was a pretty interesting fella. Well, anyway, at that point, and what they did was they announced that Sudo would be leaving for his health, for health reasons, and the Nikkan Sports asked the other 11 managers for their comments. And Masaaki Mori, who was then with the Cebu Lions and a future victim of the Bay Stars.
Victim, he says. Victim, people.
Said something to the effect of, now this is in May, 22 games of the season. He said, isn't it a little too early in the season for our manager to be that sick?
Have you seen the team play? I mean,
well, obviously he had, because he walked into that trap a few years later.
All right. Well, looks like in 1992 they were 61-69, and then 1993 they went 57-73. So,
but you know, I'll tell you what though, Ageri is kind of an interesting character because he's been an interim manager, I think, three times, and every time he's managed, he's had a better record than the guy he followed and the guy who followed him.
Huh.
So it seems like they're always getting rid of the wrong guy.
Yeah.
They should be keeping Ageri and letting go of the other bozos, but he was only a sort of a part-time manager. So.
Right. Well, I guess, I mean, you know, you always can say that they can get better players, and another podcast down the line we'll talk about how teams can get better players and how they should go about drafting and all that stuff, but... yeah, I mean, you know, it essentially comes down to the guys on the field, right? And which it's coming down to this year. I mean, look at the Bay Stars; they had a decent start to the season, and then they reverted back to, you know, the fading stars that we're used to.
Evolved.
Yeah. yeah, they started out with a high value, and they just devalue as they go, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I really want to, you know. I haven't seen enough of the Bay Stars to really to get on them.
It's probably intentional too, right?
No.
I kid because I love.
Yes, we know that.
That is you're today's theme.
You said John's full of love tonight. So.
It's because my sweetheart is back in New York, so I'm all alone. So all the love is building up here.
Well, how can I stay a safe distance? okay, John.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, getting better players always helps any manager. And then, but that just puts more pressure on you. And, I mean, it wouldn't stop them from wanting to fire a guy if they didn't think that he was getting enough victories, whether they had a good team or whether they had a poor team out there. But,
right.
But we just don't see this happen in Japan. And, you know, at the moment it happened, I told our boss at the office, I said, you know, if this were a player who was, you know, saying, well, you know, you're going to give me a contract or I quit, we'd be tearing him up. And, you know, Riggleman didn't really get torn up in the press the first day. I think it was the second day they started to say, hey, wait a second. You know, I heard somebody on a talk show say, yeah, if this was a player, you know, we'd be tearing him up. And I'm saying, hey, I said that yesterday when the guy quit. You're a day late. I think they have microphones in Japan in there.
Well, who
listening to my conversation.
Who quit Seattle a couple of years back? Mike Hargrove?
Yeah, he walked out in the middle. No, it wasn't Hargrove. It was someone wimpier than that. I don't remember because he had this really cheesy press conference in which he said...
Don,
you know,
Wakamatsu.
No, it wasn't Wakamatsu. It was before the Wakamatsu era.
How many managers have the Mariners had since Ichiro came over there? It seems like they get them out of cereal boxes or something.
I don't know, but if anybody can remember, you guys send us an email.
Are we opening the can of worms there?
Well, you know, there's probably only one or two worms. We can put them back in the can if they get out, but... But, no, I don't remember who it is, but who it was, but, he, you know, he really should have been gone way before that. It was pathetic. So, good luck with that, Seattle. They're going through managers, but they're actually winning some games now, so good for them. All right, moving right along. There was kind of a big injury last week that we didn't get a chance to discuss. Nippon Ham Fighters second baseman, he's a Golden Gloves second baseman, I think five times, and Kensuke Tanaka slid into second base, and his left foot kind of hooked on the bag as his body kept moving, and he ended up with a break in his ankle.
Yeah.
Now, some of the reports had him out for 4 to 6 weeks, and others said he's gone for the season, so I didn't know which one to believe. I figure, you know, for the actual healing, I think it's like a couple weeks or something, but then, you know, they're going to see if he can actually do rehab or if he has to wait to do rehab.
This is an ankle, not a wrist. He can't, he can't run. He's not going to be running on it.
No. And it really hurts. It hurts them. We have to see how it affects his game because he's the perfect player for that team in terms of playing second base. He's a great defensive second baseman and he's having a great season.
What do they lose with Tanaka gone? They lose their leadoff hitter. They lose their best hitter.
Arguably.
They lose perhaps their best fielder.
Base stealer.
So essentially, the only person who may be as valuable as Tanaka to the Fighters is Yu Darvish.
Every fifth day. Or once a week, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, once a week, he is by far more valuable. The only problem is he only pitches but once, you know, on occasionally twice in a seven-day period. So Darvish might have the way he's pitching this year, he might have a great, great year and be more valuable than Tanaka with Tanaka out for 4 to 6 weeks.
If he's out only 4 to 6 weeks, I mean, right. We're hoping. I mean,
so what are we talking here? What are we going to lose? What's the difference between him and you mentioned Iyama?
Yeah, Iyama can come in and play the position, but I don't think he's going to have the offensive production, so they're going to
way in hell.
They're going to end up having to pinch hit for him in late-game situations where they need runs. Then they have to stick out somebody like Nioka.
No, they have Imanami. They've got a whole because of Makoto Kaneko's constant neck troubles and back troubles, they have a whole... I don't know what, a whole supply.
A stable?
They've got a regular supplier of middle infielders who can't hit. I mean, that's harsh, but they have a bunch of guys who can hold a glove.
Right.
So the pinch hitters is, you know, this is a thing that here we're in the Pacific League. We have 28-man rosters,
mm-hmm.
essentially. They can only put 25 on the bench in one game, but they have three guys. They can shove three of their starting pitchers off the bench on any day.
Mm-hmm.
They're using the designated hitter. You want to bet they can't find four infielders to come in every time every time they're down a run and they need a pinch hitter?
All right.
They can do it. They can snap their fingers and do it. I don't think that's a big cost. But I think it does cost having that one guy in there every game. Is it a big cost? It is. It's a big cost if they let it be. If they say, he's going to be back when he's back. We're just going to do our best until then. No reason trying to do more than we can do. You know, they're sensible about it. They're relaxed, confident.
Right.
What would it cost them? Yeah, maybe a win. If they panic, a whole hell of a lot more than that.
Well, I don't think they would panic and try to, you know, we don't see a lot of in-season moves anyway, especially among contenders. But
Well, you do.
Really?
They don't have options, but the Fighters have options there. The only option they need is a feel-good option. That, we should have a player who's a bigger name than Imanami or Iyama.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they shipped out their next guy to the Fighters, to the Marines in the offseason. They have a few guys who can play second base. I don't think that's an issue. The only issue will be if they panic, and that will be if they go out, try to trade for somebody who's a known second baseman, and then just give away the farm.
Well,
that'll show us that they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I don't see that happening. I don't either. Yeah, I looked at the, you
I
know.
Meant, I meant the players panicking. I mean, if people think, Nashida says, we've all got to buckle down. We're in deep. I don't see it happening. I don't see it costing him a lot.
Well,
If he misses the season, that's different.
Yeah, it depends on how serious this injury is, and it depends on who does what in his place. I think mostly in the field. I think they're not going to worry so much about the bat. Certainly they would like some offensive production and some stolen bases, but I don't think, a couple of stolen bases here, as much as teams have been bunting anyway, I don't think, they're going to worry about stolen bases. So it just comes down to, can you play the position and help, run prevention and get us off the field? And, if the glove guys are the guys they go with, then they just take the hit on the offensive side.
Well, that's going to be a hit, though, because he's really their best offensive player.
Yeah, he's pretty productive. I think you could put him anywhere in the top four, and he'd be really productive. He's not going to hit home runs, but he's certainly a clutch player, and he's really productive. So I was I knew he was hurt. I saw the play, and I knew he was hurt, and I knew he was coming out of the game, but never in my wildest dreams that I think it was a broken ankle. I mean, he just slid into a base. But that just tells you what kind of speed these guys generate out there. I mean, it just looks like...
You know what worries me is that we saw yesterday and today, we saw Yoshio Itoi hitting home runs. And that's a good sign, but there's this threat. You know, whenever a player has a number of good results, it's so easy to get in that groove,
mm-hmm.
in what's happening as opposed to what you were doing right, basically.
Right.
And
right.
I'm thinking that he may be thinking, I kind of got the knack of this. This happens. It's so easy to do, especially when your team needs you to step up. And he's a big, Yoshio Itoi is a big player.
Yes, he is.
If he starts thinking, a home run here would be really helpful, well, that might be the end of it. You see that starting to happen, and the Fighters could really be in trouble.
Yeah, but, he's a big, strong guy, and actually I would like to, we have a question coming up later in the show about all-star picks, and I would certainly put him in the all-star game with the production that he's having this year. But, forget about the mindset. Let's look strictly at the production, and I think if a guy like that is going to be able to hit with power for them, that you know, Nakata Show is doing a great job, and I think that was you know, on my part, that was unforeseen coming into this season. But you know, it's been, what do we have, more than 50 games now, and I think he's been pretty steady in his production. He hasn't been too high, hasn't been through any. He had a couple slumps, maybe one prolonged one, but you know, that happens. He's been very consistent for him, so I think they're starting to rely on that and get used to it. And you know, if he's going to do that, I don't think they're going to have as much trouble scoring, and maybe they can fill the void until Kensuke comes back. But it didn't stop them this weekend when they had a showdown against the first place Hawks, and they took 2 out of 3.
True.
Didn't slow them down at all. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. They had Yang Jong-sho leading off all three games in Fukuoka.
Another
thing that's going on is, you know, the other thing is that he's the leadoff hitter. It's not a low pressure role. Yang's had some trouble when he's put in the spotlight, as you know, he was the big draft pick and didn't particularly want to play for the Fighters. He wanted to play in Fukuoka, where he was going to high school, from the Taiwan kid from Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he goes by Yo. So if you guys get confused, he goes by Yo. That's one of the.
That's his registered name.
That's his registered name on the back of his jersey.
Yeah, although now in Romaji, they gave him back his name from Taiwan, his Chinese name. And he's young, so he's still, you know, he's forever young.
Huh. Take that, Rod Stewart.
Damn right. So I do worry a little bit about that. People, you know, he has to be put into a position. He's a really gifted athlete, but, you know, if he try, he's put in a position where he feels like he needs to step it up. He can do it, but the mindset is an issue, and I'm sorry to keep going back to that, but that's what I look for. If you see things start to spiral, it can get really ugly very quickly.
Yeah, certainly for him, and mostly because this year, I think, I'll have to check the numbers, but it looks like he's getting more playing time than
he's an everyday player for
than him. He's gotten before, and so now, you know, he had some really good stretches early on in the season, but he hit a lull. Let's say,
yeah.
And
I think he's finding his level. He's probably not a 300 hitter yet. Could be
right.
In a few years, he's still, I think, 22 years old.
But the difference between him and Itoi is that Itoi is a player, and
he's a player, and he's been around a lot.
He's been around longer.
Also, another player came out of a niche. He was a pitcher. He's a converted pitcher,
so he's a great
player. Yeah. Okay, well, shall we move on?
Let's move on. Actually, we were going to talk about this series now. The Fighters went down to Fukuoka, and they took 2 out of 3. They popped the Hawks on the chin there. Yeah. I don't think
today they got popped back.
Well, I don't. Yeah, they did. I don't think the Hawks saw that coming. I think they, you know, the idea, and probably we didn't either. And let's be honest, last week's show we were talking about. Okay, well, the Hawks, this is their year to win the league title and then go on to win in the second stage of the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I write my blog the other day and I look and I say, wait a second, they're only one game ahead of the Fighters.
Right.
Why was I handing this thing to these guys? Because, you know, just because I picked them in the offseason.
Okay, well, now look at what we've got. We've got Uchikawa's gone for the while.
Little while, hamstring.
Little while. Yep, we got Tomura's out for a while.
Replaceable.
Yeah, but he was more replaceable when there was Uchikawa around to replace him.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know what happened to Ortiz, because I know he left the game the other day, but if Jose Ortiz is still playing all right, he's going to be
productive. This is who they had in the outfield today. They had Hasegawa in left, who's a good player, although he hasn't really done much in a couple of years. Fukuda, another household name.
You're just being mean now. You're just being mean.
And I wish I could remember this fella's name. I mean, I've talked enough with people from the Hawks that I should remember. But
I'm looking it up now because I can't remember. Egawa.
Yeah.
He played the other day, at least.
Egawa, yeah.
He played the other day. And he was productive for them the other day, but I don't know if he played what he did today. I didn't get a chance to look.
Egawa didn't play today.
Okay. Since
Kidokoro.
Kidokoro. Oh. Well, they're scraping across the bottom of the barrel, but, you know, these are guys who have played before for them. I think Hasegawa is probably the best replacement, but if you're saying he started in a different position.
Well, he's a starter. He's been in center field.
And I don't think they want to go the Matsunaka route. I mean, they're just going to get him hurt.
Because he's a quality hitter who hasn't had a chance to play. They might as well just let him play. He's been too good. He's too good to play on the farm, and he's not established enough to play every day.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Matsuda was for a couple of years.
Our MVP for the interleague, yes.
Right. Hey, that I told you so is warming up.
Well, I still think they're going to be fine. Uchikawa will be back in time. You know, they could stick Matsunaka out there on occasion when they need to. And I just think they have a surplus of outfielders. If it were Kawasaki
they have
or somebody,
a surplus of outfielders. All of a sudden, they don't.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But that's why you have the surplus. So it might be low now. It's gonna be replenished soon.
It would be ironic if, after trying to trade every outfielder in the system last year and having some success at that suddenly they don't have any.
Yeah, because, I mean, defense is important to that team, and you don't want to go the Matsunaka route because that's going to weaken your defense. And Kidokoro, I haven't seen enough of.
He's a good defensive outfielder. I think they could have a good outfield. The only problem is Egawa is really not an outfielder. He's a third baseman. Matsunaka is really not an outfielder. He's a first baseman.
Yeah, and Ortiz is not really anything.
So we may find out why. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with them. It's just going to be curious to see who they pull out of the hat in the next couple of weeks. But again, like the Fighters,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be a case of not panicking. And what I don't really see either of these teams panicking. If this is a team that was aspiring to raise itself up a level, all the players would be going, oh, geez, this is just what we need. We're screwed.
Panic, no, because they have enough victories under their belts, collectively, or, you know, individually and collectively. They're more than 20 games over 500. This is ridiculous the way they're running away with this thing. But, something to watch for. Something to watch for.
Okay. Okay.
Let's go on to fielding questions. All right. You want to read this one? This is someone you say you actually might know.
we have a reader, listener. Excuse me. We have a listener from France named Clément.
Clément. You know, I have some French in me. Clément.
Clément. Clément. That's a street in San Francisco. Okay, and this may or may not be a fellow I met in 2009 at the WBC in L.A. And he writes, I wanted to know who, besides Darvish, was the best Japanese pitcher in our opinion. And if we wanted to take a major leaguer, who would be our favorite major league pitcher?
Okay.
Okay, John, why don't you start? Who do you like in Japan besides Darvish?
I would pick Darvish as number one, so that was a good assumption. And my number two guy would be, no surprise, Ma-kun, Masahiro Tanaka of the Golden Eagles and Rakuten. Just a stud. I mean, you know, this is a guy who came out of high school with a lot of pressure on him to perform. And I remember talking to Jose Fernandez, I think it was either Tanaka's first year or second year, and he said, the guy's untouchable. They let him stay out there and pitch into trouble and out of trouble. He's untouchable, and they don't do anything. And it seemed like they were just letting him develop and become, you know, a pitcher they could rely on. Even if he got into trouble in late-game situations, that he'd be able to get out of it and keep him in the game. And he has been doing that, you know, the past 2 years, and this is not a high-scoring team. I wouldn't call it a bad team. The record is bad. They're in last place. They're struggling, but I wouldn't call them a bad team. They have decent, players up the middle. I'm not sure how good Kazuo Matsui is at this age, but he's decent enough. But this is a team that doesn't...
Actually, up the middle is an interesting thing, because the second baseman is Yosuke Takase, who's older than Matsui, I'm sure.
He's in and out of the lineup, too.
He's sturdy. He's sturdy. He's useful. He's dependable. He's not really... doesn't have the range. Matsui doesn't really have the range. The center fielder's pretty good. Shima's pretty good.
Yeah. So they, I mean, they've got enough talent around him so that, you know, I mean, today, I'm sorry, not today, but he won yesterday, which was Saturday.
Right.
He won his seventh game, and that's, you know, the team.
Well, he was dealing.
Yeah.
He was dealing.
The team doesn't have many wins, so, you know, he's doing well, and he's my number two guy behind Darvish. In terms of major league pitchers, I wish it were a Dodger. I wish. What's his name? Billingsley would pitch well. I wish Clayton Kershaw would dominate like he does most of the time, but they don't. And so I'm going with
Clayton for Giants.
Yeah, yeah, blah blah blah, Giants, blah blah blah. I only hear blah 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 when you say Giants. it's Justin Verlander with the Detroit Tigers. I mean, and I'm not saying that because he threw a no-hitter and came close to another no-hitter. Someone asked me the exact same question about 3 years ago, and I said it was Verlander. And I'm dreaming of the night that, yeah, you know, the day I wake up and they say Justin Verlander has been traded to the Dodgers. You know, I'm waiting for it. Because they can trade anybody on that team. Matt Kemp, anybody, Ethier. I don't care who it is. They get Justin Verlander, I'll be very happy. So he'd be the guy. What about you?
Me? Well, in Japan, I have to go with, you know, with the raw numbers. I have to go with Sugiuchi. Now, one of the things you have to really like about there's two things. The downside to Sugiuchi is he doesn't have the great velocity.
This is Toshio. Toshio with the
Toshio Sugiuchi, the one of the Hawks left-handers, one of their battalion of left-handers.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the big velocity. He doesn't have the big body, but he has great balance when he's not punching out the benches.
Boom, boom.
He's got to work on his combination there, keep from breaking both hands.
Jab, baby, jab. Stick and move. Stick and move.
Right. That's right. He's got to learn a little more of that wax on, wax off.
Mostly the wax off.
Okay. Anyway.
Meaning,
But what he has is he knows what he's doing. He's a small guy. He has tremendous balance. He has learned tremendous composure. He has a great deceptive move. His ball is very hard to pick up.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Slider and his fastball have used essentially the same motion. He doesn't give away anything. Okay, I like him. So he would be my choice as the best after Darvish. The velocity is an issue because you would think, well, how long is this guy going to pitch? And that's always a question. With Markun, if he learns to be more economical and Shima learns to that he can get out of jams without throwing 20 sliders with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
Then he could have a really long career. Now, in the majors, I have to go with...
Long pause? Is this for drama? Because we all know it's going to be a Giant. We all know it's going to be a San Francisco Giant. You can't hide it.
The Freak Show. I call him the Freak.
The Freak Show.
Tim Lincecum.
Tim Lincecum, yeah.
It's, you know, there's two guys I'd pick. It'd be him or Cliff Lee. But I'll stick with my guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. Like I said, I mentioned two Dodgers, so you only mentioned one. But, I mean, one San Francisco Giants, so I got the numbers. But, yeah, he's quite a talent. And I even like watching him pitch. I just don't want him to do it against my team, you know.
Live for that.
But, yeah, you can't go wrong with the Freak. I mean, you know, Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, CC Sabathia, there are a lot of good pitchers out there. All guys who, you know, one day if they came to Japan would be big stars and draw a lot of attention. But I don't think we're ever going to see them here.
Yeah.
Instead, I think we're going to see some of these our stud Japanese pitchers go over there in time, I suppose, you know, Makun could be going over there. Darvish, we had scouts looking at him the other night, so He could be on the verge. So you guys in the States who listen to us could be seeing those guys in the coming years here pretty soon.
All right.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim Allen. Thank you to
our... thank you, John. I want to say thanks to John for putting this thing together. He's the one who does all the work.
I do nothing. I stress out. That's all I do.
Okay. Well, that's work in itself.
I could do all the work, and then without you and without Michael Westbay, I'd be sitting in my house listening to myself talk. So that would be...
Well, that wouldn't be as much fun for any of us either.
No, that would be pretty
fun. Because we enjoy your company, and you're better with the rest of us.
All right. Thank you to our sponsor, Shooters in Nagoya, and thank you to Michael Westbay for appearing on the show
Yes.
and for all the work he does. And thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you next week. You can email the show at yakujohn@gmail.com. We'll try to answer them on the show. You can look for us on iTunes. Just search for Japan Baseball Weekly. We'll talk to you next week. Good night, Jim.
Night, John.
Bye-bye.